but a place where they get fed, where they might see a dentist or a doctor for the first time, where they get a boost to their self-esteem and skills that might just last through school and high school graduation and into the ways they parent their own kids. But at its core, Head Start is just a place where kids are surrounded by friendly faces playing with them, reading them books, and just smiling at them, like Flemmy insisted they do.
That was the voice of Danya Abdelhamid, who hosted this episode along with Carol Sutton Lewis in a story brought to us by the podcast Lost Women of Science. We just heard about the importance of early childhood education and programs like Head Start. But the Trump administration recently implemented mass layoffs at the Office of Head Start and the Office of Child Care. And Project 2025 wants to completely eliminate Head Start. So right now, the future of that program that Dr. Flemmy Kittrell contributed so much to looks to be uncertain. For now, I'm Lucy Kang. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all. Whoa, 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 whoa.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Taravat Talapazand. She is the Assistant Professor of Art Practice at the Schnitzer School of Art, Art History and Design. Taravat is here talking about the Arlene Schnitzer Visual Arts Prize. The exhibition for this runs through April 26th at Portland State University. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Taravat.
Thank you, Joseph. It's really nice to see you again.
So you teach painting here at PSU, and you and your colleagues looked at a whole bunch of entrants from students, PSU art students, and there were three winners, and each got a cash prize, $4,100 each, and the work they produced is on now in the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art here on Broadway. So who were the students who entered, and what is the prize that they were going for?
So each year we offer this prize to our students in the Schnitzer School of Art, Art History and Design. So these three areas, students that are still attending the school are able to apply. They submit images of their work, they write an artist statement, and they do all this on Slideroom. And we have first round of faculty that review the works, and we have faculty from each area. Art history, we have art and social practice, printmaking, textile apparel, sculpture, painting and drawing, photography, and so forth. We review the applications together, and then we bring them down to a number where we can then give it to the second round of jurors, which are outside professionals. So, for example, a representative from Nike or Wieden and Kennedy, a visual artist, a curator. And we come together, faculty and this second group of jurors, that we help each other come up with the three finalists to award that year.
Yeah. The artists have to be PSU art students, but they win based on their kind of resume, their pitch, but then they can make something completely new for this exhibition.
Right. So when they finish the application and receive the award, they get to have a check cut to them, and they can do whatever they want with that money. Pay rent, art supplies, go on a trip to Europe, whatever they desire. The only thing that they have to do is they have to prepare for an exhibition the following year, starting in February, at the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art. We then pair each student with a faculty member, so they have a mentor that they're working with throughout that year, just having check-ins, mm-hmm. making sure that they're ready to exhibit and follow the guidelines, of course. But also the three artists work together. They meet with each other either in person or Zoom to talk about the show, maybe find a thread that really connects the work together. So they don't necessarily have to be alone in the process, which is really great. I think the mentorship and also collaboration is another really wonderful aspect of this prize.
Mm-hmm. Of the three artists, the first one we'll look at is Olivia Del Gandio. So she did an MFA in contemporary art practice, social practice. So PSU is known for social practice, kind of art where you don't just make a thing, you go and do something in the community, and the doing is all part of the arts, and then you document it.
So when Olivia applied, she was finishing her MFA program in art and social practice, which is a very unique program that we have here at PSU, where students are able to work with the community, the greater area of Portland and beyond, and also working with the MLK school where they created KS Mocha, where they get to mentor students, they work with artists, they do bigger projects. It's a really spectacular program. And Olivia was graduating. It was really great to have her offer this museum space to share her research, working with this group of people, and be able to also create a book. So it was just another great opportunity for Olivia to expand on her own research that happened after she graduated in the MFA program.
So Olivia Del Gandio, she went to a town called Keene in New Hampshire, and then kind of lived with people at the Covenant Senior Living Center, and she came up with a series of images in the end of people's hands. The book she made is called In Our Hands, and it's, you know, black and white pictures of old people's hands, which is pretty stark, and they're contrasted with color pictures of objects. And if you read the book, it's objects that were meaningful to these people who are all in their 70s and 80s. She talked to them every day about aging, what it means to age, about memory, about legacy, things like that. And then she created these sort of photo collages. What I liked about it was she went into the practice not knowing what the end result was. So it's a kind of day one, get to know everyone, you know, ask some questions and have a drop-in kind of place where people come and find out what she wanted. When you teach social practice, are there any rules? I mean, do you just go out there and do what you want?
Well, I don't teach social practice,
right.
But from what I hear, the students, or in this case, Olivia had already graduated. Mm-hmm. She is an artist herself, went on her own to really share a space with these senior citizens mm-hmm. and give them the opportunity to share their stories and make connections between herself and them. And what's so beautiful about this is that you really see that with the hands. You see that there is this journey, this age, this time that these humans had, and this space that Olivia was able to share with them for them to exchange their stories and pictures from their families, patches that they were able to collect for the duties and the places that they served, the stones that they collected when they often went into the forest or into the beach. You have a bowl and a mm-hmm. rolling pin where, you know, this must be somebody who really enjoys baking. Mm-hmm. And so without the faces of these people, the hands are really telling the story. And I think this is what is so unique about this collection. I mean, the pictures are beautiful. They're mm-hmm. larger scale. They're in a row. They're almost in this kind of checkerboard style with the black and white stark photographs with the color photographs. But this is what is so great about Olivia, is that if you saw her exhibition and her MFA exhibition at JSMA, it was very different than what we are seeing here.
Mm. What was it?
She had a really awesome fashion show. She created an installation, and she was making garments by upcycling. Mm-hmm. So they were recycled garments, and she had different bodies, LGBTQ models being able to walk with their personality and attitude and sharing the clothing that she had created. Mm-hmm. And then we see this, and it's very different.
It's very different, yeah. So in the book, for instance, the mixing bowl, a woman had inherited this from her mother, and it's a sort of yellowy beige ball with a white band around the outside and these black cracks. And, you know, they discuss the cracks, and the woman who owned the bowl sort of thought about them differently, and she made her think more about her mother and their relationship and the cracks in the relationship. So all the objects are held by hands, and they're on a kind of green silk background. And then the hands themselves are black and white on probably the same silk background, but it looks gray here. Yeah, there's a rolling pin. There's the Serenity Prayer on a little coin that looks like a kind of New York subway token. Family pictures, like you said. One of the hands has an Apple Watch on its wrist, which is kind of sort of out of place because everything else is like rings and bangles and things. In focusing on the hands, do you think, instead of the faces, what kind of effect does that have for you?
Well, for me, you know, the high contrast in the black and white photography puts me in a place of, I don't know when this was shot or what era. And I love that I'm in this liminal space, that it could be from 50 years ago, or it could be from yesterday or even tomorrow. And so it really kind of puts me in this moment of pause in terms of time, because we're in the stream of time, and time is fleeting, right? And here we are spending time with these photographs of these humans who are at the end of their lifetime. But it seems to me, in a joyful way, I see these photographs as a celebration of life, as a way for me to really archive the things that I do treasure, and that things that I want to keep with myself as I grow old, and that I can share with maybe another artist who wants to do a research mm-hmm. about me, potentially. That would be amazing. Mm-hmm. But like this, my first Valentine mm-hmm. letter. Like
that,
it's
that is
so
a happy
sweet.
Story because yeah. they were still living together in the home, and they'd been married like 50 something years. Mm-hmm. And that was the first Valentine he got.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really clever, too, this checkered pattern with the black and white and this kind of soft green background in the color photographs, because the green and the flesh tone, the reds and the oranges, they really complement each other. So it really pronounces the flesh and gives it even more life than it might, you know, have in person. And I think that it really just animates these mm-hmm. spaces in a really genuine and just stupendous way.
Mm-hmm. And you made a very good point that people don't cosmetically enhance their hands. You know, the rest of your body might be tweaked a little as you age, but nobody can do anything about their hands.
No plastic surgery for hands. Nope. Your hands will always tell your age. Mm-hmm. It'll always keep the story.
Mm-hmm. Let's walk over to the second of the three artists in the exhibit, H.G. Garner. And they were a BFA in art practice comic studies certificate. And they were working on a 3-part comic book. They did the first one as part of their BFA. And now they're doing an MFA in Florida, right?
Yes.
Working on part two, so that's what they entered for the competition.
Yeah, this is definitely still a work in progress. And what's great is that HG, when they applied, they were putting together their BFA exhibition here at the JSMA, and they exhibited the first part of their comic series, much larger scale pages. And then here they brought the second part. So it's a continuation, you know, we're excitingly awaiting the third and final part, where they have shared that they will have that available on their website soon, by the end of this year. Mm-hmm. But here we see a very, you know, again, black and white comic illustrative pages that are part of this larger comic series that they're working on. And the story is about a female student who discovers an island where they're studying that nobody else sees. But here you see a snowstorm, there's a little bit of chaos, there's a lot of this zooming in and zooming mm-hmm. out. And, you know, HG has been one of our best comic illustrators. I can't emphasize enough how talented they are, and we are so proud of them to further their studies at University of South mm-hmm. Florida's MFA Creative Writing Program.
This presentation, there are these 24 by 18 inch panels hung vertically, so the short side is at the top, and they're black and white drawings. They were done on a tablet, right? They're digital drawings, mm-hmm. and HG mixed in photos in certain places, small, subtle places. But it kind of looks like pen and ink, blown up bigger than a comic book. And the kind of story is the student goes to get a package and is very full of self-doubt and says something about the snow and then realizes nobody else can see the snow. And they get very, very paranoid and go back to their dorm, I think, break, throw something out the window, and then just get more and more kind of anxious and sort of hunched over. So it's very Craig Thompson, right? It's very like blankets, lots of small repeated images with just tiny changes in facial expression, or a lot of zooming in and out of details of eyes and profiles and telephones and things like that.
I feel like it touches on the anxiety that maybe a student or a young adult feels in society, where you may feel different yourself, or you may feel you're in a space that, you know, you don't really, you're kind of on your own island. I mean, if you really think about it, right? And mm-hmm. so I really love the way that HG is really taking, a cultural kind of like feeling maybe in an understanding and putting it together here in this comic, and really expressing probably bits and pieces of their own life and their own experiences in this series. And it's nice that we have it layered on top of each other, kind of offset. So you're not reading it in a book where you're more accustomed to seeing a comic or being able to flip through it online, but here we really get to relish in this digital, this very detailed digital drawing that they painstakingly created. It's a different way of being able to experience a comic and kind of read through it and move your body through the space as well.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Taravat Talapazand. She's the Assistant Professor of Art Practice at the Schnitzer School of Art, Art History and Design. Taravat is talking about the Arlene Schnitzer Visual Arts Prize, which is on now at the university through April 26th. Still talking about H.G. Garner. This series is going to continue, correct, when they get their MFA in creative writing in Florida. So a lot of the times you see snippets of comic books online, but then you never get the whole thing. So will there be any kind of continuity?
Absolutely. In the statement that you'll see here, that's part of the exhibition, HG does promise and note that they're planning on finishing this comic series and have it available for free on their website mm-hmm. At the end of this year. So we're all very excited to read how this all comes together at the end.
Mm-hmm. If someone is doing a comic studies certificate here at PSU, are they being driven towards the commercial marketplace?
I mean, well, what's really interesting about our art practice program is that it's very interdisciplinary. So you can take art and social practice classes, you can take comic illustration classes, sculpture, printmaking, textiles. You get to choose what studio classes that kind of meet your interests mm-hmm. In your own practice. And so in HG's case, they were really interested in comic illustration design. So they took those classes to help further their understanding and learnings to create what is now their own comic mm-hmm. series. And now the second half is them getting their MFA degree, master's degree in creative writing, so that they can really kind of full circle their own practice in being comic illustration and creative.
If you study comics, there is work in like storyboarding and stuff in the movie world. And what other kind of illustration could somebody do?
Well, I mean, we have a variety of students who are interested in both comic illustration, video illustration as well. We have a very exciting partnership now with Leica, which is local, and
the animation company.
Animation, and a lot of students are really interested in Leica. But then there's also other larger companies and smaller groups here in Portland that bring artists together that are specifically interested in illustration and comic design. There's illustration community groups, and there's also larger organizations, like, for example, like Nike, you know, and or White & Kennedy, right, where you can use the skills that you learned in these courses and apply it also in, like, more of a digital and media corporations, mm-hmm. if you so choose. And so it's great that these classes are able to teach the students the not only like how to conceptualize, right, the ideas, but also the technical, right? Mm-hmm. And so then they're able to decide what avenue they want to kind of go down in that path after they graduate. Mm-hmm.
The third artist we're going to look at is Michelle Jackson, and she's still an undergrad here doing a BFA. And Michelle does, well, she was in your painting class, right? Because you teach painting, you're a painter. So she did oil paintings, watercolors, and then she got into photography and felting as well, but large-scale felting. So Michelle takes pictures of women's bodies. I mean, she describes herself as fat and queer, and it's all, her work is sort of body positivity. So these are pictures of herself standing around in underwear, two women cuddling on a bed in a sort of glow of orangey red lights with green highlights and purple, a felted stomach, so just an excerpted stomach with a big belly button, a large sort of 5x3 felt portrait of a woman with a head stuck up another woman's arse, as far as I can see, naked, and she has a cane, the one in front, and bunny ears, and the woman on her knees has a leash, I think, right, leading to her. And then finally a photo of a woman lying back on a pink background with sort of cupcake wrappers and sprinkles around her and cream on her face and shoulder. So these are all different media, but she came out of painting. So what happened?
I mean, Michelle doesn't stop at painting. I mean, clearly. She came in herself with the felting of a stomach. I didn't teach her that. I don't think anybody did. And mm-hmm. so what was really wonderful is that, you know, she's been taking classes that really fit and meet her interests in her studio practice. So a lot of painting, a lot of drawing, a lot of color, a lot mm-hmm. of joy. Mm-hmm. She really wants to celebrate fat joy, body positive, and those members that are part of the LGBTQ community. And what's so interesting about this work is that we don't really get to see enough of it. And so I feel like this is like, you know, wrapping the most glorious piece of candy that I can ever see and eat. And I'm able to tap into this community mm-hmm. that for so many years and generations back have been kind of taboo, you mm-hmm. know, and pushed away. And now we get to praise and, you know, be able to celebrate these bodies and these communities. And in this collection, it's really wonderful because it shows this interdisciplinary practice that our art practice program is really a part of. And it is a great example that a student can be able to work on any ideas that they like and be able to execute it in many different ways. And so the watercolor photo of herself showing her body and her size, so delicately painted with just beautiful light versions of color. Mm-hmm. The two women embracing that you described, it's like a rainbow of joy. It's a loving embrace. Mm-hmm. You know, there is sexuality that's involved in here, but it's in a very tender, joyful way. And then the newest piece, this large 3x5.
What's it called?
Well, the whole series is XXXL.
Oh, okay.
Right? And so we've got titles like the watercolors reaction, the oil is This Must Be the Place.
So the big one is called Jessica and Cinnamon.
Jessica and Cinnamon.
Okay. She hand felted this. You show me a time lapse she did, yeah. a video of herself sort of picking away with a needle at this giant piece of white denim.
Yes.
Tell us about the background. Well, it's not just white.
Yeah. So she had felted the piece first on this white denim, but the white space was just too much white, right? Mm-hmm. You have these beautiful figures that seem to be floating. So we needed to ground them mm-hmm. in the space. And so we talked about possible ideas of executing that. And she came up with a great idea of keeping it very soft. So going back to using watercolors, mm-hmm. really watering them down to very faint, light, soft pastel colors, and being able to tone the denim with a lot of water and a little bit of color from the inks to kind of give it some space, mm-hmm. give it some lighting. And
so you gave it a ground, right? A sort of shadowy lower fifth where the feet are, so you know where the ground is. Mm-hmm. And then on the left side, the white is sort of golden or yellow, in keeping with the yellow light that's hitting the taller figure, and the right side is more blues, greens, and purples. So she just painted that on the denim with a brush?
Yes, directly on the denim with a large brush. And you're right, she's keeping with the lighting, and she's really pulling the colors that are already being projected on the bodies to then be seen in the background in a much lighter version, so that you can be able to imagine a space, but not necessarily mm-hmm. see, is it a room, is it a bedroom, or the outdoors? Mm-hmm. It's kind of keeping it up, leaving it to the viewer mm-hmm. to be able to decide and to imagine. And what's also really great about this installation altogether is that you've got these little tiny felted pieces that say, touch okay. So she's inviting the audience to touch these felted pieces. Mm-hmm. And just to be able to feel the wool and be able to touch art in a museum space is so rare. Mm-hmm. And that invitation, I think, is another layer of just being able to find joy and find pleasure in these works.
Mm-hmm. So you as a teacher were involved in the making of these works. Like, you advised on the white background.
I mean, this was really all Michelle,
right.
I have to say.
But this is before she won a prize.
Right. But you know, yes, like, we did a little texting back and forth, mm-hmm. or we got together in her other studio at Fans Only, is an artist collective space that I had started. And she had shared with me this white mm-hmm. denim. She talked to me about these ideas. You know, should I use this watercolor kind of crayon, or should I keep it very light? And mm-hmm. we decided to keep it light. You know, there was a certain point where she had this wonderful, colorful rainbow sequin fabric that she was thinking about creating like a curtain space. And she decided, oh, no, that's too much, right? But our mentorship with these artists are really just a place for them to just bounce ideas off of mm-hmm. us, right? We want them to really come up with the ideas all on their own.
I mean, this is university, so you're also teaching them how to enter a competition, how to apply for a grant, you know, how to get their stuff together, how to take pictures of their work so it looks good on, what's it called, slideshow?
Slideshow, that's the application, slideshow. Yeah, process, yeah. I mean, I think that's what's so important about what Arlene Schnitzer offered for the students. It's not just the prize, the exhibition, the money, but it was the process in which these students had to apply for it, which is something that they're going to have to do outside of school, mm-hmm. you know, in their careers, to apply for grants and residencies. And that is a required course that we offer for students called Professional Practices. And that's when they learn how to write artist statements, bios, and do mock applications for residencies and grants. And when this application is open, and it is open right now, and it closes
for next year,
and it ends, I believe, May 25th, we are encouraging students. We have flyers all over the campus, you know, in classrooms. We're encouraging students to apply just so they can get a handle on how that process, what that process is like. Mm-hmm. And it's also free, so it doesn't hurt to apply at all, you know. And they get that experience, and then oftentimes that package that they created for this application, they can use it in other applications. Mm-hmm. Something that's very unique too for this application process is that we ask the applicants to make a 2-minute video of themselves talking about their work, either in front of their work or showing slides of their work and them talking over it. It's another way of them practicing their own voice and how they get to share their work, because we're living in a world of technology and Zoom life, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of applications now where, when you're a finalist, you do have to do these Zoom interviews.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So they want the artist to have a personality beyond their work?
No, I don't want to say personality, but be able to share their voice. We want to be able to hear how they explain their work, because sometimes it can be so different than reading it in an artist statement. Yeah. It's just another really unique way for this application process.
Mm-hmm. So when does it close?
May 25th.
But you have to be a PSU art student.
You have to be a PSU art student or art history or graphic design. And we get students in all these areas to apply. And I do also want to shout out to the faculty that are involved in the jury process, Kate Bingham in graphic design, Kiera Hill in art history, Lisa Jarrett in MFA art and social practice, Allison Herrera in textiles and apparel, Kat Richards in printmaking, myself in painting and drawing, and just so many more. And we just really come together and really celebrate and enjoy the process of selecting the next three students that we get to award and support for their exhibition in the following year.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Taravat Talapazand. She is the Assistant Professor of Art Practice at the Schnitzer School of Art, Art History and Design at Portland State University. And Taravat was talking about the Arlene Schnitzer Visual Arts Prize, the exhibition of which runs now through April 26th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Taravat.
Thank you so much, Joseph. And don't miss out on the MFA BFA show that's coming up at JSMA. Art will last forever.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Andy, moan, my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver stream. Can't tell them apart at all. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. La Unión Europea toma represalias ante la entrada en